This is Barbara Glickstein. Women shouldn't have to explain why their health care matters as much as anyone else's. But now that Senate Republicans and this new administration are actively working to endanger women's lives, it seems the fight for equal treatment has just begun, or should I say, continues. This past week, Senator Kristen Gillibrand said this, quote, "The Affordable Care Act said to women of America, you can't be charged more just because you're a woman. It said you can't be dropped coverage when you become pregnant. Imagine becoming pregnant and having your insurer drop coverage because you are no longer economic or you cost too much money. Imagine being a cancer survivor and then having your coverage drop because you survived cancer and you cost too much money," end quote. We made sure contraception, preventative care service, health care, screenings, mammograms were affordable and accessible. And if we take that away, these families are left without the basic care and women's basic care. So here we are. We're talking about, once again, what will happen with the repeal or the replacement of the Affordable Care Act on another segment called Adverse Effects for Health, etc. We need women's health protected, and that's what the Affordable Care Act has done. My guest is Krista Palencia Esposito. She's a certified nurse midwife, a professor at Fairfield University Egan School of Nursing and Health Studies. She's also a practicing nurse midwife at Women's Healthcare of Trumbull in Connecticut. Thank you for joining me today on Health Cetera.
Thank you, Barbara.
You have been practicing as a nurse midwife in many communities, both in the urban setting, in small towns, in academic medical centers. You've seen what the Affordable Care Act can do in terms of access to, specifically we're going to talk about on this segment, reproductive health access. What are your concerns if there is a repeal and a replacement that takes away access to birth control, access to well women care, and access to terminations of unwanted pregnancies?
Well, my concern is you're going to see a skyrocketing unintended pregnancy rate and the resultant physical, emotional, and economic burdens that are placed on the woman and society at large with those unintended pregnancies. Removing the access and affordability of birth control is going to have a very large ripple effect. And in fact, Texas is now struggling with the spike in their maternal mortality rate since they defunded or substantially decreased Planned Parenthood services by $70 million. Back in 2011, and also decreasing the access to abortion services. And they've seen their maternity mortality rate go from 18.6 to out of 100,000 to 30 through out of 100,000 through 2014. So I fear that that will happen nationally if the access and affordability of birth control is removed with the repeal of the ACA.
I have spoken to other clinicians in the last couple of weeks as we all anticipate what potentially could happen. And I understand in their practices there has been a deluge of women coming in asking for a six-month supply of a birth control prescription, asking to have an IUD and other forms of long-acting reversible contraception put in place before there are changes. Have you or your colleagues experienced that in your practice?
Absolutely. The minute Trump was elected president, I was getting emails from patients and phone calls asking to be expedited through my office to have an IUD placed before their coverage was taken away, and in fear of the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, the IUD being the longest long-acting reversible contraceptive method we have. Many of these are young women that really feared that they would have many, many years of struggling to afford birth control when the ACA was repealed.
Some of our listeners may not be aware of what the cost of these types of birth control are when they aren't covered by insurance. I know that the numbers that you may be discussing have to do with being within a range of costs, so I won't hold you to be the exactness of it. But for example, monthly birth control prescription pack for low estrogen, progesterone, or just estrogen birth control pills, before the Affordable Care Act or in the early passage of the Affordable Care Act, there was concern that college campuses would not be offering them in their health centers, and what it meant for college-age females to be able to afford to purchase a monthly supply of birth control pills. What's the range of a cost of birth control pills when it's not covered under the Affordable Care Act?
Well, if they do not have insurance, it could be whatever the pharmaceutical company wants to charge for that birth control pill. It could be over $100 for a certain type of brand name birth control pill. The Affordable Care Act made generics free. The insurance companies still chose to decide which ones they were going to give free. But the Affordable Care Act afforded the ability to get a pill and a few different kinds of generics at zero cost. And in fact, the Affordable Care Act decreased the long-acting reversible contraceptive methods, the intrauterine device, the IUD, and the implant substantially. The cost-sharing for women, the amount of money they pay out of pocket for those long-term, they're called LARCs, long-acting reversible contraceptive measures, decreased by 70% with the IUD and 72% with the implant with the Affordable Care Act. Those devices can be, you know, $1,000+ with device and follow-up care.
And that would be for the coverage of the device as well as the consultation and insertion at a clinician's office like yourself.
Exactly.
Now, one of the things that has also happened with the advent of increasing IUDs and other forms of long-acting reversible contraception, as you called them, the LARCs, is that prior to fairly recently, it was not recommended for women who were heterosexual who had never had a previous pregnancy. That's changed, hasn't it?
Substantially, and research in the last 5 to 10 years has proved over and over again, and shown over and over again, the safety of long-acting reversible contraceptives, the IUD in particular, being extremely safe with young women, adolescents even, and nulliparous women. Those are women that have never had a child. We see no increased risk of infections or infertility after the use of those devices. Very different from the 1970s, where certain IUDs are causing some major morbidity and mortality. Those IUDs don't exist anymore, and they are very applicable and appropriate for women of all ages under the right circumstances.
So given the data that you reported in Texas about the impact of increasing maternal mortality, increasing number of unwanted pregnancies as a result of lack of access to birth control, let's talk about the state of Colorado and what we've discovered there in the last 4 or 5 years since they've made birth control freely accessible and free.
So Colorado took it upon themselves to a very generous grant in 2009 to 2013. They did a beautiful study there showing the statewide initiative of Title X funding and access to women of birth control methods, particularly the LARCs, particularly the long-acting reversible contraceptive IUD and the implant, and the increased access to goals were the increased access to family planning services and the use of LARCs. And they saw substantial decreases in unintended pregnancy rates and the subsequent adverse effects to maternal and newborn outcomes. The economic consequences of that are profound, because when a woman gets pregnant and she did not plan to be pregnant, the subsequent economics, physical and emotional ramifications of that are very widespread.
So let's talk about the conflicting messages around removing access to, on a state-by-state level, more and more restrictions for terminations of pregnancy, and this movement to remove access to birth control when we have the data and the knowledge that birth control prevents unwanted pregnancies, decreases abortions in states that have made that available. And we have a discussion going on about removing access to birth control through the Affordable Care Act and the defunding of Planned Parenthood, who are not allowed to use federal funding for terminations of pregnancy, and that the areas where they're serving women in states throughout the United States are this for them, for many women, this is their primary source of primary care. How do you understand this as a nurse midwife? How do you reconcile this tension of political decisions being made about women as you are practicing and taking care of women who are seeking these services?
Well, it makes me very fearful of what will happen to access and care if the Affordable Care Act eliminates the strides we have made in caring for women. Recent news articles have come out about the move to defund national Planned Parenthoods if the changes do occur. You know, the Affordable Care Act is one of the greatest advances in women's health. And removing all of that, I think we're going to go back light years in women, being able to afford it. Women are going to have to choose between, getting groceries or putting gas in their car and their birth control method that month if they're on a short-term birth control method. So it gives me a great amount of anxiety over the next few months, what's going to happen. And even on a national level, the outlay of money that's going to be the financial burden of the national economy on the number of unintended pregnancies that will happen if the women are not afforded access and affordability to birth control. You know, the Affordable Care Act saved women $1.4 billion on birth control pills alone in 2013. That's a big amount of money.
That's a significant amount of money. And, one of the other areas that we will be covering on Health Cetera as the impact, as we see the unfolding of some of these actions, is its impact on the healthcare workforce. And as a nurse midwife who has practiced for a number of years in urban settings and smaller towns, as well as in academic institutions, the role of the nurse midwife in well-woman care and in a maternal child's health care has been established as being safe and economical and in many communities where it was thought women who are poor were high risk has been proven otherwise, that in fact midwifery care has a level of expertise and should be expanding. Are you concerned that these restrictions and changes in reimbursement and coverage will also impact the number of people going into advanced practice? I know you're a faculty member at Fairfield University at the Eden School of Nursing and Health Studies. Are there conversations going on in the learning environment about what could potentially happen and impact people going in to become advanced practice nurses and getting their doctorate as nurse practitioners?
I think that the need is even more enhanced for nurse practitioners and midwives and family nurse practitioners to fill the void that's going to happen as it's already happening. Physicians are retiring in record numbers. And the mid-level provider, the certified nurse midwife, the nurse practitioner, is the exact and perfect role to fill that need, especially in women's health. Midwives are full-scope practitioners from early GYN care to postmenopausal and end-of-life care and pregnancies in between. And we have very good evidence, research-based knowledge that, in fact, our outcomes are better than other disciplines because we are very close to the cuff and we follow guidelines on women's health procedures and protocols and practices very closely. So in fact, I think that it would be foolhardy to not embrace midwifery care to help fill the void in women's health service needs, particularly as OBGYNs are retiring in record numbers nationally.
And so we're fortunate in that the level of state by state, we're beginning to see more leeway and removal of archaic obstacles to the independent practice authority of advanced practice nurses and nurse midwives, although we're not there yet nationally. And the need for this level of care and well-woman care as these restrictions potentially in terms of access and affordability are one and the same. Nurses have often practiced in areas where physicians are not interested in practicing, whether that's rural areas or in community health centers or in low-resource neighborhoods. So I'm pleased to hear that so far in the academic world, in the nursing world, we're not seeing a slowing down of those degrees. We have just a couple of minutes left, and I know that this is the beginning of a conversation of the what-ifs, and you're following this issue very closely as a concerns women as a citizen and as a practitioner, a nurse midwife practitioner, as well as an educator. What do you see potentially coming out of your work or going forward, a platform that you'd like to be sure of, is made available to you to speak to these issues?
I think allowing the midwife and nurse practitioner a voice, and I think the nursing community at large needs to rally and make sure our voices are heard on a national level to ensure that the ramifications of, particularly in women's health, my passion, the ramifications of removing what has been put in place in a large degree is going to have very severe consequences. To women's health and to the national economic climate, and making sure that we're using our power in numbers. We're one of the largest professions in the country, and we need to use that to our advantage.
I want to thank my guest, Krista Palencia Esposito, a certified nurse midwife, professor at Fairfield University Egan School of Nursing and Health Studies. Ms. Palencia Esposito is also a practicing nurse midwife at Women's Health Care of Trumbull in Connecticut. Thank you for joining me on Health Cetera today.
Thank you so much, Barbara.